The following is a recording for Bill Thorne with the National Retail Federation on Tuesday, February 5th, 2019 at 10 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open up the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Bill Thorne. Mr. Thorne, you may begin.
Thank you very much. My name is Bill Thorne. I'm Senior Vice President for Communications and Public Affairs at the National Retail Federation, and we thank you for joining us today. I'm joined this morning by Matthew Shea, who is our President and CEO of NRF, and NRF's Chief Economist, Jack Kleinhans. To kick things off, let's just go to Matt to discuss the annual forecast. And Matt, can you tell us about your expectations for sales growth in 2019?
Bill, good morning. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Glad you could be part of this conversation. So before we get into the conversation about 2019, I think it's worthwhile to just reflect for a bit and maybe a little context. And look back briefly at 2018, which obviously is setting the stage and laying the foundation for what we expect this year. And I should note something that we've all talked about quite a bit, and we can have this conversation later too. But should note that our 18 results are based on data from the Commerce Department, and due to the government shutdown, we all know there were a lot of casualties of the shutdown in a lot of areas. And one of them, of course, is that there's missing data for the month of December. So we obviously had 11/12 of the year, so we have solid data for that. We did have to make some modest but reasonable and, I think, conservative assumptions to compute the 18 annual retail sales. And, again, it's preliminary, and once the figures are released, the estimate of annual retail sales for 18 may change. But we do know, based on all the information we had, certainly seeing that the beginning of the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter, October and November, that 2018 was a very good year in terms of overall economic activity that was really underpinned by strong job growth, wage increases, household net worth climbing to new heights, and again, relatively tame inflation, which I think is important. And we expect that 2018's GDP growth is going to come in at close to 3%, maybe 2.9% once those numbers are released. So looking at 2018, our assessment is that retail sales during 2018 grew at 4.6% over 2017. And I think that reflects the momentum for 2017, and we continue to build on a good year to last year, which was a very good year, and surpassed expectations and achieved what was record growth, and really continues. And I think if you open the lens a little further, a decade of really very steady expansion, continued growth as total retail sales have grown. Even in an environment in which there continues to be dramatic change and transformation. And across the industry, in a variety of segments, retailers continue to capitalize on that overall economic growth and very low unemployment, wages, and consumer confidence, and all of those things coming together to deliver a very impressive year in 2018, which sets the stage for this year, 2019. And so we all know that that there are some complexities in the economic environment. That's always true, and will continue to be true in the coming year. The overall economy, in our view, and in the conversations that we have and the data we see, is very solid, very sound. And we project continued growth for the industry in 2019. And as you'll see from the release that we just sent out a few minutes ago, we are expecting retail sales in 2019 to increase between 3.8 and 4.4%, which we think is very reasonable given some of the things I've mentioned before and that I will get into in a little more detail here in a minute. We recognize, for a variety of reasons, that the decade-long economic expansion may slow. Nevertheless, it's our view that we're going to continue to experience above-average GDP growth, probably in the range of 2.5%. And most importantly for retail, we see a number of signs that consumers and spending remain very strong. And, you know, for all of the noise and speculation, and I don't want to say, you know, hand-wringing, but maybe I will. The truth is that the consumer is in a very, very good place and continues to be in a very good place. And consumer spending is obviously, you know, fundamental and central to our overall outlook. Consumers remain in better financial shape than at any time in many years, thanks to the strong job market, to low unemployment rates, increased wages, reduced taxes, and we see that in the numbers that are coming out of BLS and other places in terms of new jobs, wage growth, and I think there's just the overall feeling among workers in terms of their confidence about the market. Consumers are going to spend as long as they're confident about the future of the economy, and we believe they are confident. And as I guess timely in some ways that that today is the same day as the president will deliver the State of the Union later this evening. There are of course a number of public policy priorities that that we believe need attention, and you know, I think the most important and the fundamental job of our elected leaders is sort of the Hippocratic Oath of first do no harm. And, you know, so job one, I think, is simply to stay out of our own way and avoid the kinds of self-inflicted sorts of mistakes that can have a negative impact on consumer confidence and put some of this potentially in doubt. And certainly one of the things that goes in that category is to simply keep the government open and not allow another government shutdown when the short-term funding to operate the government expires on February 15th, later next week. Obviously, if the government isn't functioning, there are a whole range of things that don't get accomplished, you know, are sort of more limited interest in terms of this call is kind of the fundamental numbers we rely on that come out of commerce and other places. But there are many, many other kinds of things that are impacted that support economic growth in the economy. And closing the government is just not a responsible way to ensure continued economic growth. And more to the point, I guess, our elected leaders in both parties, both on Capitol Hill and in the administration, can't come together in a thoughtful way and make progress on the real-life issues that impact American families and workers across the country. And obviously, it makes it increasingly difficult for us to determine the kind of economic activity we're going to see this year and the state of retail. There obviously are also a number of other uncertainties that exist and potential external factors. We've talked quite a bit about ongoing trade issues with China and our other trading partners, you know, global growth. In many ways, you know, the U.S. is an outlier. We look extremely strong and robust relative to most of the rest of the world, and that's a positive, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. We sometimes get distracted by volatility in the equities markets and things like that. And as one bright economist said to me recently, the stock market successfully predicted 13 out of the last 7 recessions. So, I mean, we can't get too hung up on noise. We have to focus on the real fundamentals. In our view, the fundamentals are very strong. In addition, and we saw this at our convention, our annual meeting, we had nearly 40,000 retailers and partners together about a month ago in New York at our annual event. The retail industry continues to transform itself in ways that I think improve the connections, the levels of engagement between consumers and retailers, eliminating friction points, finding solutions, enhancing convenience, applying technology, data, predictive solutions, a whole new range of things that are making retail much more contemporary, much more successful, and improving the customer experience. And again, the customer and consumers are at the heart both of our forecast for the year and at the heart of what retailers do every single day. So for all of these reasons, we believe 2019 is going to be very strong. It will be another solid year. That may be a more optimistic forecast about the prospects for our overall economy than we've heard from other quarters. But we believe it's really important that we should focus on the fundamentals. And the fundamentals of the economy and of consumers are very healthy. And for that reason, we think we can have another very strong year in 2019.
Thanks, Matt. You know, it's amazing to me that we're here again talking about government getting out of the way of allowing the economy to work and to prosper. I think you said it best in the statement that just went out. You said it's time for artificial problems like trade wars and shutdowns to end and to focus on prosperity, not politics. But we find ourselves here once again. We're also joined by Jack Kleinhans, who is the NRF's chief economist. Jack, can you give insights about the economy, our forecasts, and perhaps some consumer expectations?
Sure, Bill. Let me just kind of pick up off of what Matt has been talking about and provide a little contours around the forecast. First of all, I think it's very important that we have entered in the 10th year of an expansion. You know, when July rolls around this summer, we are probably going to have a record expansion. And it's our belief that we will continue through 2019. It's good economic growth, albeit measuring a little bit lower than last year. We had the benefit of government spending and income tax cuts, and those are going to begin to fade as we move forward into the economy, but still the economy remains solid. Regarding consumer spending and the labor market, precisely is where we believe our strength is coming from, or we, our expectations. Certainly, current data that we've just had on job claims, low unemployment, solid job growth, a wage growth that is also providing solid footing for the consumer. And we can't minimize the importance of lower gas prices. So all of those together really provides that foundation that Matt has been talking about. In fact, let's add just some current data to the mix here. Last week, we've had several reports, and including today, that the economy is stable. The ISM for manufacturing rebounded to 56.6. We got information today, the ISM, that's the Institute for Supply Management, for services is also solid, came out. Some slower rates, but still an improving economy. New home sales jumped in January. That was after some mixed reports, some challenges that we saw later in 2018. Can't minimize the importance that the Fed has also put on a different direction on how they're going to handle interest rates. It's a tricky balance for the Fed. I think they are really focused on avoiding choking off this expansion. Why, in part, can they do some of this? Is largely because inflation has been tame. And in the past, we would see wage growth start to percolate into higher wages, but we haven't seen that. But that's one of the positive stories about our forecast. Our expectation is that wages are going to continue to be supportive of spending. We had the employment cost index that came out last week with the wages and salaries increasing 3.1%. We even also saw the construction industry pick up in latest data. So the economy has actually been, you know, kind of a little bit wobbly based on certain data, but obviously from what I've just mentioned, these indicators are supportive of the forecast that we have. There are some concerns. Certainly global growth has been entering into the picture, and economic growth can be impacted by the global affairs. We've also had just recently, I would say in the last day or so, some information that has helped us to see where bankers are looking at consumer credit. It had been loose going into the last quarter of last year. Right now it seems like they've tightened, but that might be just because they're reacting to some of the turbulence that had been seen in late December. But all in all, I mean, as I've just kind of hopefully provided to you, I think that the current data is very supportive of how we're looking at the consumer. Retailers are on the front line of the economy, and they're recognizing how the consumer is spending, and I think that they're also in a good place to understand how the economy will be performing. So the bottom line, I think the economy is in a good place, and I think consumer spending is solid, and I think it has some further growth yet this year.
Thank you, Jack. Shelby, would you want to go ahead and turn this over for questions and give some instructions on how to do that?
At this time, we will open up the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now pause for a brief moment to allow everyone a chance to signal for questions.
You know, Shelby is lining up the queue. Matt, you just mentioned that we came back last month from one of our most successful big shows ever, our NRF 2019. We had a lineup of some extraordinary speakers, global retail leaders like Chip Berg, Rodney McMullen, Marvin Ellison, Brian Cornell of Kuberja Lee. You had the opportunity to talk to them on stage. We had innovators like Warby Parker, we had Alibaba, we had Amazon, and, you know, we had some insights from Janet Yellen as well about how she views the economy. Key takeaways, how are our retailers looking at the year ahead?
So, Bill, I would say that that they're very positive on the opportunity to continue in an environment like this one with overall strong fundamentals to be successful and to continue to innovate and to serve customers. I mentioned earlier the sort of the hand-wringing. I mean, former Fed Chair Yellen was incredibly positive along the lines that Jack just said. She said, by June, this is going to be the longest expansion in economic expansion in the history of the U.S. economy since we've measured it. That's going to happen, and it's going to continue. Consumers are in a very good place, and really validated, I think, what the CEOs that you mentioned and others that we had a chance to talk with and other executives were saying, as Chairwoman Yellen's former colleague, Ben Bernanke, said a couple of weeks before we were with her at our show, you know, Chairman Bernanke made the observation that, you know, economic expansions don't die. They get murdered frequently by the Fed, but by other, policy mistakes. And for us, you know, there are things that we could and should be talking about from a policy perspective, things that need to happen for our economy, and we'd like to be focused on solving some of those problems. But one thing should not happen is we shouldn't let, you know, elected leaders and policymakers, create the kinds of self-inflicted wounds that put us in a position like the one that Chairman Bernanke mentioned. And we shouldn't also, you know, talk ourselves into a recession. There's no reason we should be talking about this. I mean, we ought to be focused on the positives instead of everyone hedging a little bit at a time, you know, really for no reason, you know, without a lot of basis. So I think, you know, the overall tone and mood was very, very positive. They see opportunity, and they remain optimistic about the prospects for 2019.
That's great. Thanks, Matt. All right, Shelby, why don't we go ahead and open it up?
Yes, sir. Our first question is from Ann Dinocenzio.
Hi, thanks for having this call. You know, you're talking about the wage pressure. You know, wages are going to continue to go up. So what are you hearing from retailers and how, you know, obviously this is going to hurt the bottom line. So, you know, can you talk to me, like, what will you see this year, more automation? You know, how are they going to tackle that, you know, the higher costs of wages?
So Ann, this is Matt. I'll just
yeah.
Share a couple thoughts, and then I know Jack's got more detail he can and thoughts he can share. I guess I would just start with the observation that for all the talk about, you know, inflation and all the economic predictions about there's no slack in the labor market, we keep finding 300,000 people that want to come off the sidelines and go to work. So I mean, there is inflationary pressure, and Jack will talk about that, but there are workers that are coming into the workplace. I think from the retail perspective, it's certainly gotten more competitive. We've heard our members talk about that. You know, we got a snapshot of that at the holidays as they spoke about going out into the workforce and throughout last year and the things that are happening in terms of the skills they need, the training they need to provide, the benefits, and the sort of wages and the other things. You know, I think that's a fact, and we certainly see that in the retail industry frequently because we're on the leading edge in many ways, just because of the numbers of people that work in the U.S. And when you're the number one employer in the private sector economy, you employ, you know, 40 million people. You see that. So I think retailers have seen this for the last several years as we've come out of the recession, really, and I think that's why you've seen retailers taking a number of steps in terms of their wage and benefits to make sure they attract the kind of workforce they need to be successful. So I think that will continue this year, but I did not hear anyone express concern about being able to do that. What I heard was, you know, we continue to invest in skills and training, and frankly, some of the things that our foundation does in terms of our certification credentialing programs, I think that's all part of the, you know, the new economy that we live in is upskilling those people because the jobs are changing and evolving.
Jack?
Well, just to pick up on what Matt said, yes, the market is very competitive. In fact, the most recent data on JOLTS for the retail industry showed that we had 800,000 job openings. And this tight labor market, basically, in order to attract people and retain them, we're seeing some wage increases. But the wage increases does not necessarily turn into inflation, per se. This is kind of the conundrum we're in. At any other point on other expansions, we would have seen wages increased by 3.5% long ago, several years ago, based on how expansions work. We got to also remember that wages are also to be able to return some value in terms of productivity. And as Matt was just saying, companies are adapting technology and training people. So to the degree that we are seeing higher wages also maybe translating into higher productivity and efficiencies for these companies. And right now, you know, from a standpoint of if you're concerned about inflation, it doesn't seem to be one that is very evident, and I think that's part and parcel why the Fed has put themselves on pause.
I just had a quick follow-up with productivity because it's been a low, you know, for a year, you know, several years, and stores have been trying to increase productivity. Are they starting to see that now, like gains in productivity as they're, you know, changing jobs and, you know, relieving workers from manual or, you know, tasks, things like that.
Well, it's very hard to answer that question because we really need to think about the supply chain. What we used to see in stores was a lot of back office and other administrative jobs that might be in support. But many of the developments are broader than just what you see at the brick and mortar. Activities that are going on in warehouse and distribution and delivery, all of these are factors that are entering into the equation because it is a very competitive market. So all I can tell you is I think there's good anecdotal evidence that retailers are sustaining themselves. And at the same time, remember, they're also facing really very little they have very little pricing power. So they maintain their competitiveness, and in order to do that, we've seen added jobs, and there's technology that's being put to work.
Okay, thank you. Thanks,
Ann. Shelby, next up.
We'll now take our next question from Courtney Reagan.
Hi there, guys. Thanks for holding this call. This question might be a little bit more for Jack. Jack, I just want to make sure I know in the press release you guys talk about the forecast sort of taking into account continued turmoil with trade, but are your assumptions based on the fact that what is happening with this last round or next round of tariffs, that it stays at 10, that it doesn't happen, that it goes to 25? I mean, what's the assumption there?
My assumption is that I'm optimistic about trade talks.
What do you mean by optimistic?
So I'm optimistic that the implementation of the next round would not go in place. If it does happen, I think that it would be a surprise to many. I think the markets would be back into some more disconcern about how the economy is performing.
Okay, and if for some reason your assumption does not follow through, does that mean you guys would need to revisit your forecast? I mean, how would we account for that?
I think that we all would have to recognize that, the outlook is going to be certainly impacted by it, Courtney. And obviously we're also waiting on sort of data from the shutdown. So I think we'll just take it one day at a time as the data comes through, as well as whether or not the talks are successful. But I think we need to be realistic, at least at this point, that it appears that that there is progress being made.
Okay. Thank you.
But we reserve the right to revise. Shelby, next up.
Our next question comes from Sarah Nasir.
Good morning, everyone. Sarah here. I wanted to ask you, it sounds, talking to some analysts about the retail industry, they're talking about an era of profitless growth, or at least low profits. What are you hearing from your members? What are their strategies that they're thinking about to cut or to balance costs right now?
Hey, Sarah, this is Matt. If you spend some time at our show looking at some of the technology solutions, there's certainly a great rush and substantial investments that are being made in, as I said earlier, sort of taking friction out of the customer journey. And you saw the holiday season much increased numbers of retailers who were using stores as fulfillment centers. So I think there's a whole series of decisions that are being made in the supply chain, in inventory management, in fulfillment, that are all central to the thoughts about the future of many retail companies. I think also you see companies that continue to invest in new partnerships, in new products, in launching new brands, in talking about ways in which you can engage the customer. And, you know, I mean, I guess I – we talk about this all the time, but I don't think we can really overstate the convergence, the true blending, and the seamless nature of using technology in a store and using the store to provide solutions. You know, this was the first time I'd been at our show and talked to this many CEOs and executives who were saying they needed to make the online experience feel more like a store, whereas for years everyone's been talking about how do you make the store feel more online. And I think, you know, certainly there are going to be continued innovations in the way in which people use digital and online. But mm-hmm. I think what we heard and saw this year, and the numbers bore out the way in which stores really played a major role in the holiday season, that, you know, there are some limitations to the online experience. And you know, and that's one of the reasons that so many online retailers, those that swore off real estate, we would never have stores, you know, they have stores. They've got a physical presence. And I think what continues to evolve and change is our understanding of what level of physical presence makes sense. And, mm-hmm. and that is the thing that I think is transforming most dramatically, is how do you use what you've got? How much do you need if you don't have any? How much should you edit out if you think you've got too much? But I think all of those, taking the friction out, thinking about fulfillment, managing inventory, thoughts about real estate, I think those are all ways in which retailers are finding opportunities to be profitable. And so I think there's still opportunity for that to happen, even when there's this much transformation taking place.
Those, a lot of those sound, though, like investments to me. You know, you're talking about the seamless nature of shopping and building out their supply chain so that they can fulfill online orders. A lot of those things are that cost money. So are there things that you hear your members talking about that they're going to do this year to pay for all of those things that you mentioned?
Well, it's certainly true. I think it's true. And, you know, the place we really saw that initially, although we've seen it in subsequent years in other areas, but when retailers 5 years ago were talking about investing in the workforce, how much it was going to cost to increase wages and to improve and enhance benefits, and there were suggestions that, well, that, you know, everyone, people took a hit, earnings took a hit, people got downgraded. And yet, you know, there's at least one really large retailer that's, you know, made those investments that's on, you know, I lost track of how many quarters of growth they've had now, if it's 13 or 15 or 16 of continued growth since they made those investments. So it is true that investments need to be made, and they cost something, and there's CapEx and other expenditures that they're going to incur. I think the view is that those investments are going to turn out to be worthwhile and profitable and are going to substantially return value for shareholders and investors.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Shelby?
Our next question is from Alistair Gray. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Yeah, forgive me, I missed a chunk of this call earlier, so you may have addressed this question already, but just going back to the shutdown, how much does that hurt? How much did that hurt retail sales?
Jack?
Well, it's hard to measure because we don't have the data, and we don't know when the census is going to release the data. They're working on it. They're backlogged now. What I could just say is my expectation of what the shutdown may have meant to first quarter growth for the economy might be in the range of about 0.1% to 0.3% reduction in GDP. So it's really hard for us at this point. We've had really mixed reports, good and bad reports on how things have been going forward. We also have to remember that January is always a clumsy month to be looking at the data. There are a number of seasonal factors that are being used to measure this. Number one, we've had weather issues. The early part of January, and most of the shutdown occurred during January, early in January, had warmer weather than normal, And then we got hit with some cold weather, some snow, then we had the polar vortex. So it's going to be very difficult for us to tease out the effect of the shutdown per se on how it's going to affect the data. We're hoping that this data can be provided shortly. The Census Department has already put out a schedule for some of its data, but we're still sort of waiting because the retail data gets collected through surveys, and they're really kind of backlogged almost once.
But what are your members saying about the impact of the shutdown? I mean, and who was particularly hard hit by it?
I can't say that there's been any demonstrable reduction. I mean, it will help. It will impact. If you want more specific, then along that line, I mean, the government workers are getting their back pay, so there was delays in spending in certain sectors, probably in restaurants per se, and it probably impacted government and contractors that did lose pay. But it doesn't have a large at this point a large impact that we know of on spending.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Shelby?
Our next question comes from Paul Gluckman.
Thank you for taking my question. I want to ask a couple of things about the tariffs. And first, some clarification on what Jack said earlier in the call about optimism that there won't be another round of tariffs. Are you saying you're optimistic there won't be a fourth round on the $267 billion? Or are you optimistic that the tariffs on 10% won't go up to 25%? Percent or both?
Well, I'm optimistic that they will not impose new tariffs. And that was sort of what the question was about at the time. And we're already seeing some changes from the previous tariff and accommodations, if I'm not mistaken, just last week on trade with China, so with the soybeans. So I think that we're in a position to be hopeful that we'll see progress for U.S. and China on reaching a positive resolution and actually removing some of the existing tariffs, but with an understanding that we're going to have fair and balanced trade.
So, Paul, this is Matt. I guess what I would say is let's be clear. I mean, our view is that the tariffs are a bad idea. Tariffs are not the way to structure our trade relationships or to improve free and fair trade, because we do believe free and fair trade is a worthy goal. We think that's good for the economy. It's good for consumers. It's good for businesses, and it's good for retailers. We would like to think that there's going to be some positive outcomes here. There is reason to believe that based on some of the progress that's been made, that can be built on, and we can go forward and find some more positive outcomes. I think, though, it's important also to remember that, and many retailers have talked about this, and many of them that you and others have spoken to over the last year as we've had this conversation, that retailers have, as at least one CEO said on a couple of occasions, lots of levers they can pull, working with their suppliers, working with their supply chain, making internal decisions on product assortment, pricing, things like that. And they're certainly doing it. They've had enough lead time to be thoughtful about this, regardless of the outcome here. So while we're optimistic and certainly believe strongly that we ought to be pushing forward with a practical solution that does not include increased tariffs or tariffs on goods that are not currently subject to tariffs, we also believe that retailers are in a good place relative to the overall economy and consumer confidence to make decisions that are going to allow them to continue to operate in an uncertain environment and address whatever headwinds they may face, if there are any.
If I may follow up, you've been very vocal all along in your opposition to the Section 301 tariffs on Chinese goods, and in your oppositions, you partnered with research with the Consumer Technology Association, which I guess is equally opposed and has been vocal about the tariffs. CTA has even put out statements suggesting that the tariffs run afoul of the 1974 Trade Act and might be subject to a court challenge. Do you and NRF share the belief that the Section 301 tariffs, especially on the third round, run afoul of the Trade Act and might be vulnerable to a legal challenge?
Yeah, Paul, I'm not sure, you know, we're ready to go there yet, and we haven't thought through every potential challenge. I think, again, we're hopeful. We've had many conversations with, elected leaders, policymakers, the administration. They're well aware of our concerns, been thoroughly detailed and documented. I think up to this point, if you look at the pattern and the way in which some of these have unfolded, the decisions the administration's made, they've gone out of their way to try to avoid unnecessarily harming consumers. There are obviously some exceptions. We think they understand the potential ramifications, and for those and many other reasons, we remain hopeful that we'll see some real progress here and continue more positive conversations and as opposed to escalating or doubling down on something that we think is not going to be productive for the economy.
Have you had the legal discussions with CTA?
We have not.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Shelby, next.
We'll take our next question from Henry Carmichael.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the supply chain for moving products from factories in the U.S. to retailers. Since there's been such a positive economic impact, how do you forecast the development of supply chains going forward into 2019 for the retail industry?
So, Henry, I think we're going to see continued continued innovation there. I think it's not lost on, frankly, and it hasn't been for many years, the efficiencies that can be gained by adopting some of these new approaches to fulfillment. Some of these retail companies are obviously, extremely large, complex organizations, and so the kinds of software and technology solutions that need to be implemented to make all this work in a seamless way, takes time. I talked to one CEO just before the holidays and said, when you think about where your level of performance, which is very good relative to the competition, how much of that do you attribute to the overall macroeconomic conditions, and how much of that do you attribute to investments that you've made in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years? And he said, Matt, we have that conversation every day because many of the investments that we're seeing, pay real dividends now, today, particularly in areas like fulfillment and supply chain, are investments that we made 4 and 5 years ago, but it just takes a number of years to bring that to bear at scale. So I think that will continue. And as we walk the show floor or went up to our innovation lab at our event in New York last month, 3 weeks ago, a substantial number of the solution providers and the exhibitors and the attendees were representatives of companies that provide these kinds of solutions. So I think that signals that this is an area that's going to continue to be very popular.
Excellent. Can you tell me any specific developments that have been made?
We could get back to you with some specific examples and have some of our team that work in more detail on supply chain issues give you some give you some more guidance.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Shelby?
We will now take our last question. Matt Townsend, please go ahead.
Thank you. So the forecast you guys put out last February in 2018 is exactly what you said today, 3.8 to 4.4. Given what you guys mentioned on the call about, you know, maybe there is some economic slowing, other hurdles, artificial ones coming from the government, can you just square how you're basically saying your expectations are the same as for 2019 as they were for 2018 at this point in the year?
Yes, because last year, if you look at the underpinnings of the economy going forward, we were also at a point where we hadn't determined where the benefits of the tax legislation that had been passed. If you recall, we were learning right into the end of the holiday season in December, the tax plan, then the government spending plan. So we were looking at an economy, and I was looking at the growth rate of employment and just regular, you know, spending, consumer expenditures. And so if we hadn't had the stimulus, I think we would have a different economy today. And at this point, we're basically returning back to trend. GDP growth about 2.5% is actually higher than the trend that we've had for since the expansion occurred. It's approximately 2.3%. So the stepping down in the economy today is a function of some of the stimulus. But we also, if you recall, we refined our forecast the mid-year, and we had indicated that given these changes that 2019 was going to exceed our expectations of exceed 4.5% at 4.5%. And I think that was a reasonable re-estimation on our part.
Gotcha. And just one last thing. There's a lot of debate about the tax refund season. Some people making the case that maybe a lot of people didn't adjust their withholdings, so they're going to get a bigger tax refund than expected. Others aren't buying that argument. Do you guys have any assessment of that and what that could mean for like a one-time boost to potential consumer spending early in the year?
So this is a concern of mine. First of all, the shutdown may have delayed or could delay tax refunds, and that's a sizable amount of spending occurs in the first quarter. Now, if the refunds come in play, then we see, you know, a typical first quarter and money in people's pockets. I have not done any major changes to the forecast to first quarter spending. There are reports that there could be anywhere between $40 to $60 billion of additional money available by consumers. And what really means that people over-withheld. And I've had the opportunity to do sort of simple surveys when I've done some talks, groups of 2 to 250 people, and I've asked them how many people in the audience have changed their W-4. And it usually is about one or two people that are in that audience. Now, that's not a scientific sample, but it is the belief and the underpinnings for those estimates that are out there that people did not change their W-4. And so I think there is a high likelihood that we will see higher refunds than last year.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Thank you. Hey, Shelby, thank you very much for your help. That's our call for today. Now, if anybody has any questions about the forecast or any other issue, you can contact our media shop at press@nrf.com or call us at 855-NRF-PRESS, 7737. Thanks again for taking the time, Shelby. Thank you for your help. Jack, Matt, thank you very much for your insight. And we'll get together again soon. Thanks again.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.